Welcome to the Script and Style Show, the web show where we talk about web development with the people that make it happen. Today's episode is brought to you by TrackJS JavaScript Error Monitoring. Know when errors hit your website with the context to find and fix bugs fast with TrackJS. Start your free trial today at TrackJS.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Script and Style Show, the web show where we talk about web development and the people that make it happen. I'm Todd Gardner from TrackJS JavaScript Error Monitoring, and my co-host, David Walsh, creator of the popular blog DavidWalsh.name. How's it going today, David?
Good. How are you, Todd? It's been a few weeks. You went on vacation, right?
Yeah, I was on vacation last week with my family. We went to Disney World, as you do when you have kids and they're of the appropriate age that they, you know, insist on going to Disney World. We had a great time. It was very hot in Orlando compared to Minnesota, where I live. But I'm glad to be home, glad to be digging back into it, and glad to be on the show.
Well, okay, so Mozilla's next all-hands gathering is in Disney World. So I need you to tell me, with a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old, what do I do, what don't I do?
Poof. All right, so Disney has gone pretty high tech. And like you get these like RFID bands now that is basically everything. Like it's your ticket, it's your payment, it's your passes to rides, it's everything. It's pretty cool, actually. Like they take your fingerprint when you're scanning it in and you just like put your credit card or attach your credit card to it and you can get in and get on all the rides with it. It's pretty neat. You can see like all of the wait times for all of the rides in their app. So you don't have to like, sit and wait for the ride that you're in front of. If you, you know, walk, you know, 10 sure. minutes that way, you can get into a 10-minute wait time instead of a 50-minute wait time. That's pretty cool. A 2-year-old is rough. A 2-year-old is really rough. I mean, it's a temper tantrum waiting to happen. My kids are a little bit older. My kids are 8 and 16. So we had a little bit different constraints. We didn't get a car. We just Ubered everywhere. And that worked really well. That worked really well. Because, like, just dropped you off at the front gate. You didn't have to, like, fight your way from parking or anything like that. But I don't know if you could do that with a 2-year-old.
See, but you don't know my 2-year-old. My 2-year-old is the kid I'm going to have to – you know, get a ladder to take down from whatever castle. Trust me, this kid is 2 going on 22.
So all right.
We might be able to do this.
So the Seven Dwarfs Mine Ride is for sure, it's legit. Like that one's a good one. All ages. Seven Dwarfs Mine Ride at Magic Kingdom. It's dope.
All right, I'm going to write that down. But we shouldn't let our guests stand by.
We shouldn't. We have 2 guests today, 2 exciting guests to talk about game development on the web and a number of other platforms with Excalibur. We have 2 of the maintainers on our show today, Eric Onerheim and Kamran Ayoub, both from the Minneapolis area. Eric is a web developer at Renaissance Learning, and he works in .NET and JavaScript for cloud applications. He's online at ericonerheim.com. We'll put that in the show notes. And Kamran is a web developer at Target here in Minneapolis. He's also the Pluralsight author of a number of different courses on like Azure and RavenDB and TypeScript and probably a bunch more soon. Together, they maintain Excalibur.js, which is a framework for building cross-platform web application or web 2D JavaScript games. So thank you so much for being on the show, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Excited.
So we like to start off by learning a little bit about you and how you got into the web or how you got into games or how you got into this place in your career. What is your origin story? So maybe Eric, you could tell us a little bit about how you fell into this first.
Yes. The pit of success or So I guess I got into programming like a long time ago because of games. When I was a kid, I'd play like a lot of Age of Empires or StarCraft or
Age of Empires.
Heck yeah.
Or Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine. I played a lot of that, which is a clone of another game, and I can't remember off the top of my head what it was. But I played a lot of games as a kid. A lot of Nintendo, Super Nintendo games too. And I thought to myself, what can I do with this? I kind of want to make these. So you know, when it came time to be like, what do you want to do? I'm like, well, I like computers a lot. And I also like games. And the parents vetoed art school. So I think I'll do programming. So I went computer science major, did a graphics focus through school. So picked up a lot of that type of programming that you might use for games. Then wound up not going into the game industry. Wound up working at Fortune 500 companies and doing, you know, your day-to-day pixel pushing on the web in .NET. But it's pretty fun, actually. I'm not sad that I didn't get into the game industry necessarily.
I've heard some terrible things about working in the proper game industry.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad that I landed the way I did, and then kind of do games for, you know, a side thing.
So, hobbyist.
Yeah, hobbyist. I say a hobbyist would be good, and then Excalibur really started because my boss at General Mills, my old boss, wanted me to do a presentation on TypeScript. And I did. I'm like, what's a good demo for TypeScript? I'm like, oh, I should make a game. And that's literally the first commit of Excalibur was the demo for this, like, this talk at General Mills. So and then I was like, actually, we could just make games this way. Let's do it.
That's awesome. Side projects turning into real important things. I love it. What about you, Cameron?
I got started in web development as a kid. There's always that catalyst, you know, where you start doing like programming and stuff like that. And for me, my mom got me a library book that was about creating logos and like graphic design on the web. And I was reading through it, and it was talking about how these designers make these corporate logos and they get paid for it and stuff like that. I was like, oh, that's cool. I want to do that. So I got into web development that way. I had been an avid computer user for a long time. I also played a lot of games. For me, it was mainly on MS-DOS. So I played a lot of Doom and Hexen and Rise of the Triad, and then so like a bunch of like violent games, I guess, as a kid. But then I also played like Jazz the
Duke Nukem. You play some Duke Nukem?
A little bit of Duke Nukem. I wasn't that into it.
Doom
was where it was at for me. So I still remember a lot of the cheat codes, but and that way I actually got to hack on like a computer day to day, because my grandparents had a Windows 3.1 machine. Well, before that was MS-DOS, Windows 3.1, Windows 95, Windows 98. Because my dad was doing consulting and he didn't really have a computer at home for a long time. So I used my grandma's computer. And I would like take it apart, put it back together again. I would install drivers and all sorts of stuff like that. And that's really how I got into technology. So then, I don't know, fast forward through high school, I had a freelance web design company. So I did some work for some clients in like New York City and met people that way. And then for whatever reason, during college, I just stopped doing freelancing and I just focused on, you know, getting through college. And then I got an internship at General Mills, and that's where I met Eric. And that's how I got started with Excalibur JS. And then, of course, at General Mills, I did like web development with .NET and JavaScript and stuff. So that's kind of how I got started.
So were you the co-presenter of this this TypeScript thing that started it all?
I don't think so. I think that was all Eric.
Yep. But the tables have turned.
Yeah, a little bit. But you do, Eric, you do TypeScript day to day, right?
Yeah, mostly Angular applications. So Angular 6 and now 7.
Cool.
And TypeScript.
So you do Angular with TypeScript and I do React with TypeScript. So that's where my focus area is.
Yeah. Yep. So Angular and React both in TypeScript.
Heck yeah, man.
Which one's better?
Oh, ooh, man. Fighting words. Fighting words.
Oh, I'm sure you two have this debate.
I have a pragmatic answer. Maybe. there might be one. I think if you come from if you're the developers that work for your company, if they come from a .NET background or they come from MVC style stuff, it'll be very familiar to them in that way. So if you have programmers that are like used to doing model view controller type stuff or component based stuff, maybe even web forms type stuff, you know, curse word there, it'll be very familiar in a lot of ways, good ways. So I think that might help bridge the gap into web development, maybe where, you know, React is a kind of a different approach, like from a functional side, where, you know, certainly you can get a lot of really cool stuff going with React. It's easy to test. It's fast. It's basically just data-driven web pages.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, nowadays it's just more about like what feels good to you, you know, mm-hmm. like performance wise, if you're talking about Inferno, which is like a React equivalent, or you're talking about Vue.js or Ember or Angular or React, like performance wise, they're all about equal unless you're really, really trying to do something specific. So for me, it's just like whatever feels good. So React, I really like the nature of writing it. And so that's what I chose. And also at Target, I guess we use a lot of React. We used to do a lot of AngularJS, and that's what I started doing when I joined. But now everyone's been migrating to React. So if they had migrated to Angular, I guess I would be saying that I'm doing Angular and TypeScript as well. So.
All right, good answers. Well, let's get on to our real topic. Let's talk about playing video games on the web.
Yeah.
So what kind of games do you two like to play?
You go first, Eric, because you're the lesser gamer between the two of us.
And that's not in a mean way.
Not to play them, huh?
No, yeah. So not in a mean way. You just play less than I do.
I think it's because I get bored really easy. That's like I have a high bar, so if, like I play something, I get bored, and I'm like done. But a lot of the stuff I like to play is like XCOM, like a lot of tactics stuff. So like I love Mario RPG. I've played that over and over again. So like I love kind of the isometric or the tactics-based, turn-based RPGs, like the old school JRPGs. Ton of fun. Every Zelda game. Like so, adventure games are a lot of fun. I really enjoy those. I tend to stick to 2D games for some reason. Which is kind of informs why Excalibur is the way it is. I like 2D games a lot. So I don't know, that might answer it.
What do you like about 2D games versus 3D games? Like why is 2D? Why 2D?
I think a third dimension adds another dimension of complexity. And I've definitely fought with like cameras before, and it's much better now. Like when you're playing a 3D game, like the camera doesn't get in your way as much. They put a lot of thought into camera design. So I can't really slight 3D for that. For 2D, I feel like I might get in trouble. The experience is very like distilled to like a very crisp, you know, 2D rectangle, that I can see on a screen. I don't know. It's just, it feels good to me. I guess it's what feels good. And it translates well to our 2D panel society where we have 2D panels everywhere. So it feels right on those screens, but I can definitely see an argument for 3D.
What about you, Cameron?
So I guess a little similarly to Eric, I really enjoy, strategy games and stuff. Like I said, I played a lot of first person shooters. So I got into first person shooters a lot. I played a lot of Halo in college.
I thought you said you were focusing on getting through school.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
you meant focusing on games.
Can I make a confession here live to everybody that during one of my business classes that was super boring, I played through a game called Journey. What was it called? Journey, Dreamfall. I think it was Dreamfall. It's an adventure game, and it came out probably in 1996. I played it on my tablet because it was not really a 3D game, but it was like a 2D game that you could sort of just play idly, and it had a really good story.
Were you also listening to Journey while you did this?
No. That'd be
about the right time.
That's next level. No, but nowadays I play a lot of AAA games. You guys may have heard of Red Dead Redemption 2. That's coming out tomorrow. So I bought that as a birthday present for my wife, because she played through Red Dead Redemption and 100% of it. So she's a big Rockstar Games fan. So we're going to play that together. And otherwise, I try to find time to play all sorts of other games. Assassin's Creed, God of War, all sorts of, you know, new games. I definitely play a lot more than Eric does. He's busy doing stuff.
So David plays a lot of PUBG. He plays a lot of PUBG. More so than I think he even is willing to admit on the air. What do you think of PUBG?
So what's funny is I play a lot of games, but I don't really play a lot of multiplayer games. So I play Destiny. I played Destiny 1 and I played Destiny 2 a lot, because I could sort of play by myself, but then alongside other people. I don't really like playing games where I suck and other people have way more time to get better. It just doesn't feel fun. I did play Fortnite for a little bit on Switch with my friends. That was pretty fun. But yeah, I don't play a lot of multiplayer games. It's all like single player or like RPGs and stuff like that for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't really like other people. Other people make games not fun.
Yeah. I think the only exception for me would be couch multiplayer.
Yeah. See, like, it's multiplayer with, like, your friend group and stuff, which is awesome. It's not so great when you're, like, trying to play with random people who are, like, swearing at you and stuff. Like, it's not fun.
You're supposed to swear back.
Oh! That's what we were missing.
That's right. Well, you know, and I have a new, like, I have a two-year-old, almost a two-year-old now. So it would be harder to play multiplayer games unless it's, like, at night when I can like focus on them, but I don't want to be in the middle of a like a team game and like have to be like, oh hey guys, I gotta go, my son woke up, I gotta give him some milk or something. It's harder to do some of those multiplayer team games with kids.
So what got you excited about moving from playing games to building games?
Eric, you go.
Yeah, I think
because you didn't talk about any real like 2D side scrollers in the games that you play.
I mean Mario is a classic and everyone knows, but I think that the thing that really got me into building games was it allowed me to be like use the I said earlier that I wanted to go to art school, and that was like totally serious. Like I wanted to do art for a living, but I also love computers a ton, so it kind of lets me like marry those two interests. And also like, if you can, like the coolest thing in the world is like when you make something and then someone plays it and they have a whole bunch of like fun playing it. It's like, it's amazing. It's like it's like a weird feeling. It's like if you made something and someone enjoyed it and then they tell you that they enjoyed it, it's a wonderful thing. And then games is just, it's something that is in my skill set that I can do. So I'm not a woodworker, but if I was, I imagine I'd get a similar feeling if I made like a beautiful piece of furniture and someone's like, man, this is really awesome. But at least for games, I can make something fun and people can play it. And then, you know, you can share that. And then also you can make the game that you want to play. Like, I really want to make this like my magnum opus that I haven't made yet. Is this tactics game where you are giant robots running around a city and you're punching buildings and other giant robots and kaiju. And it's super crunchy and you can customize your loadout. Kind of like, there was a game that came out from, I always forget the name. That is basically that. but I don't know. It's like a super creative thing. It's fun to share with people. And you can kind of get that expression out and you can kind of build the thing that you would want to play. I don't know. Does that make sense? Kind of circle
totally.
Around it.
Totally. Totally. So you're building games, and you start, this whole thing started off as like a TypeScript experiment with you know, you starting to build games. Why did you stick with the web after that? Like, I understand, like, you were trying to do it with some demo, but once you started getting excited about building like a game development platform, why stick with the web? Why not build something that works in Unity or Android or Steam or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a totally fair question. Because like a lot of people tell you, like, C++ is the only way, or like something else is the only way. The nice thing about the web is it's, you got a tremendous reach, because nearly everything on the planet can run a web browser now. So if you can build games on the web, you can distribute to everyone super easily, because all you need is an internet connection to distribute your software, versus like a console, or now consoles are a little better because you can download stuff, but versus like, you know, printing cartridges or you know, distributing other ways, or running inside of an engine that requires a native component, the browser is just like a level playing field, and you can really get a lot of places that you wouldn't expect.
Oh, and you know what? We were sort of talking about this before, and I wanted to make sure I bring it up, and this is the perfect opportunity. I feel like there's a difference when you say you're going to build a web game versus you're going to build it with web technology. So if you're familiar with like Xamarin, which is a Microsoft framework for doing cross-platform native applications, or Ionic, which is another cross-platform framework, or Electron, which is like a desktop application that runs a node process and can run a website inside of it. That means that all you need to do, like for example, for Excalibur, you create your game and then you just package it for different platforms. So there was a game that we could add to the show notes, but it's an amazing looking game called CrossCode, and it was just recently released, and it was not built with Excalibur, but it was built with ImpactJS, which is another game framework. Eric can talk more about that. But if you look at CrossCode, it's like cross-code.com. It doesn't look like a web game, but it was built using HTML5 and JavaScript technology. So I think it's just important to point out that when you say like we're going to build a web game, it doesn't mean that it's only going to be in the web browser. You could package it up for Xbox. You could release it to Nintendo Switch. You could release it to Linux, Mac, and Steam, just based on like different ways to package web apps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, Nintendo does have a development kit for like embedding JavaScript canvas-based games in the Nintendo, which is super crazy.
So building for the web is like this expansive platform that lets you target not only browsers but also Electron, so you can put on desktop apps, you can put it in Steam, you can put it on Switch, you can put it on all of these platforms at once.
Yep, certainly.
That's right.
it's pretty crazy. I would like, I think, you know, 5 years ago, it wouldn't have been nearly as possible as it is now.
And we started it 5 years ago, didn't we?
Yeah. So maybe the original reason for doing it was just the web, but now it feels silly not to.
Well, and I don't know if you want to talk about performance a bit, because I think that's one thing maybe that gets brought up a lot is the web performant enough to run these games?
Mm-hmm.
So the underlying like technology that Excalibur uses right now is the Canvas web API, which is the 2D graphics canvas that almost all browsers support. And that is powered by your graphics card. So there certainly is cases where it can be not as performant, but that's what like Excalibur or other engines are for, is to be the optimizer for you. To like optimize those draw calls and put it on the graphics card in the right way. And we could talk later about some of the upcoming web technologies that are being proposed, like off-screen canvas, that will make that a lot nicer. But yeah, I mean, if as long as your browser supports canvas, you should be able to write games using a web engine like this.
Yeah, I noticed that. See, that's one sort of, I guess I would call it, I guess one sort of disadvantage to web games is that you're only as powerful as what the user has, right? It's not a space where you can control the hardware like Nintendo does or Xbox, mm-hmm. etc. And I learned that the hard way because when I was moved to Mozilla's platform, not platform engineering, but their engineering support for Firefox OS TV, we were trying to get games into our sort of app store. And I found out that the frame rate on televisions or the hardware within it is terrible. So we were trying to squeeze every single ounce out of these engines and getting maybe, 40 frames a second. But obviously when people have computers, TVs aren't built to have that really good hardware. But when you have a computer or even an iPad or an iPhone, the performance is going to be there. The performance engine can be there, I should say, as long as you write things correctly.
Mm-hmm. And we totally experienced that. We on one of our games that we built that's kind of a Tetris-ish similar matching game called Play Sweepstacks. You can play it on playsweepstacks.com. We actually crashed Windows phones because we were leaking memory. So we just like leak bitmaps into the canvas, and it totally could crash the phone in 10 minutes.
The blocks never really disappeared when you got a row, huh? They just stayed in memory forever.
That's exactly what happened, actually.
Yeah. And do you know why we found that bug? It was because someone had played the game for almost 4 hours straight, and he had used up all the memory on his phone.
So like taking a little bit of a step back, we've referenced Excalibur a bunch of times. Let's take a step back and sort of define what Excalibur is, what your goal for it is, and like where is it now?
Yeah, sure. The goal really is to make game development approachable to people that are familiar with game development and then also people that aren't. The goal is to make games easily in 2D for the web, and that's really our goal, is just to make things easy for developers and for people that are just coming to development to make games. So a lot of what we've done when we're engineering stuff is to make that core tenet a reality. And where we're going is, well, we're trying to drive there because some things aren't as simple as they should be, or they're kind of they're artifact of we didn't know what we were doing. I think we're heading towards a place, I think, where it'll be very easy to build games. People will be able to pick it up relatively easily and just go. Kamran, is there anything I missed?
No, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, I sort of mentioned that when I met Eric is sort of when I started working on Excalibur. And before that, I had no idea how to build a game. Like, it was just black magic to me. And I think one of the cool things, being friends with Eric and knowing him and him having the background of, like, how these games are built, he was able to show me, like, how easy it is. And easy in that, like, it's not actually that hard once you have some of the patterns in place. And I think what's great about Excalibur is that we try to build those patterns to be easy to use for people and approachable so that you can get started easily and quickly trying to build out your game. And then you can get more sophisticated as time goes on, as you learn more. I mean, what's nice is we try to dog food the engine quite a bit during game jams. So we build games with the engine at least once a year, if not twice a year sometimes. So that we can like try out the APIs and we get other people involved that haven't really used the engine to try to see like, okay, what parts of the engine are usable, what parts are not usable, and what needs work.
So what are some of the different components of Excalibur? What sort of common game paradigms does Excalibur address?
I think if you use Excalibur, you'll find it very similar to how Unity operates. We kind of have taken like a theater metaphor. So things are in scenes, you have actors that you place in a scene, and then everything in a scene is drawn at once. So you can have multiple scenes. You can use them for like different levels, things like this, or different screens in your app. It's the basically at its core, there's the core engine, which handles a lot of the, you know, machinery of doing the update draw loop, marshaling all of the events and all of the communication between things behind the scenes. And then for the developer, really, they're only really concerned about scenes, actors, and then if you build out your own actors, you can extend them, do all your own drawings, things like this, with the resource subsystem. So you can just load in sound, pictures, animations, these kinds of things. So that's kind of at its core, kind of what it's composed of.
How difficult was writing the collision detection? And not only that, but making it performant?
Hard. It's hard stuff.
Eric, you got to explain to everyone what separating access theorem is, because you had to read academic papers on this.
I have a visual aid right now that I'm going to do right now. So separating access theorem. Let's say I have two rectangles conveniently shown as post-it notes. So how do you know if these two are colliding? This is, turns out to be really non-intuitive and hard to solve, especially if you have rotation involved. Because like if they were like this, this is like a little easier to figure out. So what separating access does is, if you think about this, what it does is it tries to find the axis of separation between the two things. So that might be like this little line that would go down the middle here between right. these two rectangles. One way to picture it is if I had a flashlight and I was just shining it all the way around here, if I see a gap, then I know they're not colliding.
Right.
So that's basically how it works. The implementation is you find all of the axes in common, and you do a dot product to find that vector. And then you measure the length to see how far away they are. And if you're, you know, if you can't find a gap or the length is zero, then you're colliding.
So when does this get hard? This is all like V1 stuff, right? This is all day one stuff, right?
So intersection tests are easy. So that was not the worst. The tough thing now is like, okay, say these two things have velocity and they collided like that. How should they end up? And then modeling a physical universe is tough. There's a lot of good books on how to do physics stuff. I wish I could remember off the top of my head, but there's a really good article on doing impulse-based physics. So a lot of it is vector calculus to calculate like all the vectors that happen, like rotation, position, velocity, acceleration.
I got as far as algebra 2 in school, Todd. So I'm hearing a lot of words that I don't know what to do with. How are you doing over there?
No, this is over my head too. I'm still trying to wrap my brain around. Okay, so in your example, which are just squares, that's fine. But you know, the game isn't going to ship with squares as actors. It's going to have like, you know, some custom graphics with all kinds of like arms and weapons or appendages of some sort flailing about. And those are going to be the points of impact, right? Not, or do you just draw like an imaginary square around it like Mario that was just, you know, a two by one square block that didn't matter if his arms hit first or what?
You're more right than you know. The dirty secret is most things are squares or circles. even in modern gaming. You can do those pixel perfect collisions. They're just if it is important for a pixel perfect collision, you can do that. But it takes more processing power. So a lot of times the approximation is good enough. Sometimes it isn't in the case where you want pixel perfect, but a lot of times what you'll do is you'll compose a more complicated thing out of simple colliders. So like what you were saying, like you'll have different rectangles that are different parts of something.
you drew a box around Mario, and it doesn't matter. Mario hits a box.
Yeah, side scrollers are just boxes on boxes.
Yeah, I feel like half of everything that I've learned on how to build games is how to trick people into thinking your game is working. Like, that's all it is.
It's all smoke and mirrors.
Yeah,
that's the quote right there. Half of game development is tricking people into thinking the game is working.
Yeah, it's really hard to know like what the patterns are and practices. Like, I think about web development, like maybe a lot of people in the audience. Like, when we are teaching people web development, we share all sorts of patterns and practices. Oh, here's how you should do React state management. Here's how you should architect your React application. There's way, way, way less of that in game development. I think Eric likes to say, like, tribal. You know, like, a lot of the knowledge is internal to people and teams in the game development world. And certainly we have a lot of people nowadays participating in game jams and streaming. And through, like, streaming, you get to know, like, okay, here's how this person is building this game. And you learn some secrets and tricks. But, man, it's really hard to get started, I'd say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would echo that. A lot of the knowledge has kind of been gleaned slowly over time, at least for us. I mean, if you go into a game development career and you do that schooling, a lot of times they'll teach you the patterns and stuff. So a lot of it is just, we weren't exposed to it at all in our normal schooling and our normal day-to-day jobs. So a lot of it's been learning over time, like what the patterns are and like, oh, this is the totally wrong way to do this, but it works kind of, or like you've learned through pain, like that, oh, this is bad. Shared mutable state is bad. Bad.
So how is Excalibur different than some of the other game engines that are open source for the web?
Mm-hmm. I'd say in a lot of ways, they're very similar. Early on when we got started, ImpactJS had already existed. At the time, Dominic, the developer of Impact, was selling Impact for a low amount. But I was like, man, it'd be really cool if I could build something in TypeScript, because Impact at the time was JavaScript only. There might be some typings now for it. And I saw the cool things that people were doing with Impact, and I was like, oh, you know, I bet I could do something in TypeScript. Because like one thing that I had been part of at the time was we were building a big hybrid mobile app. So just a huge Cordova app in JavaScript. And like we learned very quickly that these big apps just get really frustrating over time, especially when you have to keep all the properties of something in your head and remember what is accessible to you or not. So I'm like, man, TypeScript would really help with game development in that way, since you have a lot of things hanging off a lot of other things and you want to know what they are. So at the beginning it was like, okay, we want something with types. And after we had started, Phaser kind of came out afterwards and then, kind of rocketed ahead. I'd say they've matured very quickly. Like they eclipsed us very fast, partially because they're a game company, and they can work on it full time. But I'd say Phaser and us, share a lot of similar idioms. They are very, very much like Unity for us. You know, same kind of patterns designed. They're JavaScript first, and then they have a TypeScript typings file afterwards. We're TypeScript first, so we build things in TypeScript and then compile down. They use their core rendering engine, at least in three it's changed, and I can't remember exactly how. They use something called Pixie.js for interacting with the canvas. So they've abstracted that whole rendering piece away. So they've focused on the core game aspect. But in a lot of ways, they're very similar. I'd say, to Kamran's earlier point, whatever feels best. It's, you know, some people like doing things a certain way, and that's okay.
Yeah, and I mean, let's be honest, too. Like, a lot of these other frameworks will probably have way more support just because they have a larger community around them. The Phaser community is pretty strong. It has a lot of sample applications. And we're not even 1.0. I mean, this is just something that we're passionate about and we do in our free time. And we have about four or five main contributors. And we usually do monthly releases. So it's definitely like work is happening. but we've not focused on user documentation as much right now because we know that the API surface is going to change underneath people. And rather than writing an insane amount of documentation and like sample applications to get people started, we've mostly been focusing on like, okay, how does the API feel? How do we want to change it to make it easier to use before we finalize it in like a 1.0 sense?
Mm-hmm.
So what's different? Like, what are you trying to do that the other engines are not?
I'd say our core tenet is make it easy. That's what we're trying to do. Maybe in some places we succeed or not. Other engines, a lot of times you get off in the weeds really fast, or it's difficult to do what you want to do, or it takes a lot of boilerplate to do what you want to do. Our goal is to make it easy and simple to do what you want to do quickly. Does that kind of crystallize it?
So
as far as feature-wise, we're not too different. Honestly, like the 2D canvas, a web audio, gamepad APIs, most people have those. But I guess our design philosophy is where we try to differentiate.
So you're emphasizing people who don't know a lot about developing games, right? That you said that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to focus on somebody who, hey, you know, I've never built a game. I have this idea for a scroller. I think it'd be really cool. And make it easy and fast for me to get something on the table without me having to understand a lot of game mechanics.
Totally.
Awesome. So how did you build this? So you've mentioned it's on Canvas. There's a number of like Canvas libraries, like 3JS. Did you use those or is this all your own stuff?
I have a weird philosophical stance against libraries and then I built one, with my buddies. So we tried not to take any dependencies on any other, library, just so, if we needed to change core rendering, we could do it, without having to take a dependency or be dependent on another project, that comes with advantages and disadvantages. The advantage is you get total control. Disadvantage is you've got total control and you maybe don't want to have to implement something because it's hard and you can't lean on that necessarily. So we don't have any production dependencies that we ship. It's all Excalibur. We have our own draw engine. It's mostly just really close to the canvas. We have our own update, our own eventing system, our own web audio implementation and fallback, our own facade over the HTML5 gamepad API.
Pointer events.
Yeah, we wrote a facade over pointers because like you have your mouse, you have touch, you have N number touch pointer. So maybe a mistake. But we learned a lot.
So I love hearing about the deep down stuff. What sort of are there any tricks that you can think of or share that helped you squeeze out some extra performance or helped you, I don't know, like implement a functionality that seems sort of out of the ordinary, if you know what I'm saying? Were there any of those sort of things along the way?
Yeah, I'd say for performance, the trick is measuring. So Chrome developer tools or Firefox developer tools, they have really great profilers. So a lot of times that's where the real money from the movie is made. It's just measuring. If something takes a long time, understanding why it does, and then going from there. So recently we've run across several like performance related things with Canvas, and that's because draw calls are expensive. So it's cheaper to draw as little as possible. One thing we ran into is the storing off-screen canvases, or I call them off-screen canvases, but they're not the new off-screen canvas API, like in-memory canvases. And then drawing them in Chrome, they have to do a full texture copy behind the scenes to the graphics card because it's hardware accelerated. and that's slow. So that as soon as like Chrome became hardware accelerated, we're like, why is everything slowing down?
Right.
Because of this texture copy. So when we noticed that, we're like, oh, we got to do this other thing. We have to implement texture atlasing to keep all of our images inside of the DOM hidden inside of the DOM so that they are hinted to Chrome that they need to be on the graphics card all the time and that we don't need to be doing texture copies all the time.
Oh, wow.
So weird stuff like that.
Clever stuff like that. Wrong word.
Yeah. There's other stuff too, like using the Canvas APIs directly is usually never good. Like even like draw text or draw rectangle or any of the other drawing APIs, if you're drawing shapes and stuff, that is super not performant. Mm-hmm. So Excalibur tries really hard to do like texture blitting and stuff, like bitmap. Bitmap copying to the canvas, which is really fast. So we have the ability to take a texture and apply effects to it. So you could say like set the opacity to, you know, 0.5 or lighten it by 5% or saturate it by this amount. And we have optimizations that we want to do to that, but we basically take a copy, store it, and then cache it for later reference, because every single frame, is that right, Eric? You only get 13 milliseconds per 16. Frame? 16
but
milliseconds.
But it's a little less, so 13 is probably more accurate.
Okay, so because if you want to go at 60 frames a second, then you get about 16 milliseconds or less to do all your updating and rendering. So we have to be really careful about how much overhead the engine is adding, so it's really important.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I love hearing those little optimizations. That's cool.
Yeah, there was a really good talk at a previous build conference, a Microsoft build conference, on an engineer from the IE team, the Chakra team, and he gave a really low-level performance talk on JavaScript, and there was a lot of really good nuggets in there. Like, for example, arrays in JavaScript are... I'm going to forget the technical term on air, but if you say like equals, if you say equals, you know, empty array, and then you push to it, every time you push to it, the JavaScript engine has to recalculate the length of the array, which introduces performance issues at scale. So what you have to do is you need to declare the length of the array ahead of time so that the engine can optimize and understand like where it should place stuff in the array. So we do a lot of that in Excalibur. You'll notice if you look at the source code.
Yeah.
Wow.
Also iterating through lists. You want to do the four I equals, and then the classic way to iterate through lists, because the functional way is slower. Like the dot for each. Right. You pay function call costs. And what Kamran said, you have to pre-allocate stuff, so we do a lot of pooling to avoid memory thrashing or CPU penalties for rebuilding an array in memory every time you push.
Wow. Okay, so we're not at 1.0 yet. What's next? What is going to constitute 1.0?
I think, so I meant actually, here, let me pull up my roadmap, because we actually had this discussion. So I think we're heading, we're about a year away, if I remember right, from 1.0, but a big part of it is stabilizing the API. So like, we've got an API that we're happy with, we really like this, we have tuned it for performance. So right now there's some areas that we know are not the best, but we want to tune that and get that like the best it can possibly be. There's a few features that are a little clunky right now, bug prone, and we want to like button those up a little bit. Certainly, there's a few underlying like engine architecture things that we have that we want to reorganize some stuff. If you've heard of entity component systems, it's a game design pattern for building data-driven games. We kind of want to reorganize under the covers, like so keep the API the way it is, but under the covers reorganize to decouple a lot of our game pieces, because a lot of them are very tightly coupled right now. So one part of the engine knows about everything else, kind of a thing right now. So decoupling a lot of that logic to make it easier to maintain. So
yep. We're working on, we're also focusing on sample games. So we actually have two in development right now that will be official sample games. One is like a shoot 'em up that's supposed to be sort of like an entry level sample game. And then I'm working on a more sophisticated, like a sample game that involves like all the features of the engine, so that hopefully we can do some kind of like Angular Hero tutorial type of experience for people to onboard them to use Excalibur. So that's kind of exciting.
Awesome.
So other than the sample games, have you seen some cool games come out of the community or the other organizers?
We have had a couple. We kind of creep on people on GitHub. And you can search for people that take a dependency on you. And a lot of people don't tell us that they are, but we've had, we had a gentleman in Sweden build a game for his girlfriend or wife. I can't remember. He's going to be really mad at me now. But he built a game that was like a sim game with Excalibur, and that was really cool. We've seen a couple of people try to do stuff with Tiled. So we get a lot of stuff like isometric adventure games type stuff. I saw someone build an MMO or attempt to, which is really cool. It's definitely a challenge. I've seen a couple like things here and there that people have started. Not a lot of finished stuff, unfortunately, but a lot of really cool starts.
I think as far as finished games go, we mostly have our catalog of Game Jam games that are posted on the gallery portion of the website. So the last one that we did was an office sort of idle game where it was like a set of mini games we did for the last Ludum Dare Game Jam. And Eric mentioned Sweepstacks before. That's my favorite, just because I think it's a pretty fun game that we could possibly monetize in the future. But yeah, mostly the games that we create during game jams.
So other than, you said that your favorite is Sweepstacks. What's your favorite, Eric?
Honestly, I think I'm going to have to agree with Sweepstacks. Like that one was just, we had a great idea and it's never happened again.
Although that's true. That is true. But Crypt of the Minotaur does have a special place in my heart because I did the blood animations and that was really fun.
Kamran's command over viscera rendering was really surprising and terrifying.
Hey man, I played a lot of Doom. I told you that.
It was really terrifying.
You watch enough blood animations, you can recreate it from memory, huh?
Yep. I really like that one. My second favorite is I Just Wanted Groceries.
That's really good.
Which is the plight of the Midwestern grocery shopper that just wants to go to the grocery store and not interact in any human way. and just get out with the groceries before having any human conversation.
That's so Minnesotan.
It is. Yeah. And we didn't realize. Right. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to wrap us up. Go for it.
I was going to say, we didn't realize that we built Pac-Man until after someone said it. So we built this grocery store game, and then they're like, oh, you built Pac-Man. We're like, we did.
All right, that's probably a good time to wrap it up. So what we typically finish the show off with is some takeaways. So David and I will say like something that we took away from the conversation, and then we're going to let you two plug core idea that you want us to all take away and anything else you'd like to do. So, David, let's start with you. What's your core thing from today?
My core thing from today is that Excalibur sounds like a good starting framework for me to try and build a game from. I've always wanted to build a game, but I've always sort of had it in my head that I don't have the math knowledge for it. And that's always sort of scared me away. But I think that with the stuff that we looked at today and their description of Excalibur, I think that tonight it's going to be a beer, football, and Excalibur type of night. See what we can come up with. How about you?
Nice. I am really tickled by the quote today that half of game development is tricking people into thinking your game is working. And it's really shocking me that like maybe this whole world isn't as hard as I thought. You don't actually have to do the math and calculations to make the world look, to make the world real, just enough to make it halfway believable. I really like that idea. It seems to make the whole world a little bit easier for me to kind of wrap my head around. I think it would be awesome if when you guys get to 1.0 on this, if you wrote a like intro to game development tricks kind of set of documentation with it, so that somebody who doesn't know any of this, you can share some of those choice learnings like that one with the rest of us so that we can get started. I think that would be awesome.
I think that you should also send that document to PUBG Corp and Bluehole because they're not trying to trick anyone that their game actually works.
Some shade.
Shots fired.
What about you guys? What's your core message you want to leave our viewers with today?
Go ahead, Eric.
All right. So I guess my core message is anyone can make a game. And the best way, like for us, is to force yourself to do it with a game jam. So if you really want to get into games, there's like Minnesota has a ton of stuff for game developers. And I'm totally blanking on all the organizations right now that I wish I'd written down.
Glitch Minnesota.
Yep. We have a lot of game developers in Minneapolis. But everywhere all over the world, there's a lot of meetups. But just, you know, participate in Ludum Dare. It's a game jam online. There's a lot of like real world meetups for Ludum Dare, so you can pair with people that maybe have done it before. Anyone can make a game, and in fact, you don't even need to use a game engine. You know, there's a lot of tools out there. You don't even necessarily need to use Excalibur. Use what makes you happy. You can just do it in straight up web technology. I'd say everyone can make a game. If you want to try out Excalibur.js, we'd really love to see you on like either GitHub or hitting us up on the forums, and let us know what works well or what doesn't, because that's how we adjust based on feedback. So I'd say that's my core message.
Nice. Yeah, I think I'm just going to echo what Eric said, and maybe to David's point, like, I definitely am not a math geek or anything, and everything that Eric knows about writing a physics engine is exactly why I want to use an engine, so that I don't have to do it. And I even, like, trying to learn, like, just basic vector math and stuff, we've tried to make it easy in Excalibur, so someone like myself can build a game. So like Eric said, anyone can build it. As far as everything else, I mean, Eric, you didn't plug your website, but it's ericonerheim.com, right? People can follow you on Twitter, the same one. And then you could follow me at Kamran Ayoub, kamranicus.com. And there you can find like all the courses that I have. If you are interested in learning TypeScript specifically, I do have an 8-hour course on that. I checked yesterday, it was $10. So if you want to take yourself from like not knowing that much about TypeScript to being able to write TypeScript day to day, I'm just going to plug that. But other than that, this was a lot of fun, guys.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being on the show, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
I think we had a great show today about games on the web and Excalibur. I'll be posting up the show notes here in a little while with links to get a hold of our guests and all the different stuff we talked about, and how to get a hold of David and I if you'd like to chat with us. We already talked about how the listeners can get in touch with you, and that will be out in the show notes. So we're going to be coming back next Thursday with another episode of Script and Style. We do not yet have our topic locked down yet, so if there's something you'd like us to discuss or a guest you'd think we should talk to, hit us up on Twitter and let us know. Thanks so much for listening. Until next week, I'm Todd Gardner.
I'm David Walsh.
The Script and Style Show is recorded and produced by David Walsh and Todd Gardner. We'll see you next time on Script and Style.